4. Toward noon, the ranking engineer from Lanferman Associates of San Francisco and Los Angeles, the firm which produced the mock-ups and prototypes and whatnot from Lars Powder Dry's sketches, showed up at the New York office of Mr. Lars Incorporated. Pete Fried, at home here from long years of experience, sauntered, round-shouldered and stooped, but still tall, into Lars's office. He found Lars drinking a solution of honey and synthetic amino acids in a 20% alcohol base, an antidote to the depletion of body constituents by the trance state which had occurred earlier in the morning. Pete said,
"They found that what you're swilling is one of the 10 major causes of upper GI cancer. Better quit now."
"I can't quit," Lars said. His body needed the replacement source, and anyhow, Peter was kidding.
"What I ought to quit," he began, and then became silent. Today he had talked too much already, and before the man from Koch, who, if he was any good, remembered, recorded, and put on permanent file everything he heard. Pete wandered about the office, crouched for all eternity from his excessive height, and also as he tirelessly reiterated his bad back. There was a certain vagueness as to what the bad back consisted of. Some days it was a slipped disc. Other times, according to Pete's rambling monologues, it was a worn disc. The distinction between these two eternal Jobish afflictions he never ceased delineating. On Wednesdays, for example, today, it was due to an old wartime injury. He dilated on that now. "Sure," he told Lars, his hands in the rear pockets of his work trousers. He had flown 3,000 miles from the West Coast aboard the public jet, wearing his grease-stained shop clothes, with, as a concession to human society, a twisted, now black but perhaps formerly brightly colored necktie. The tie hung like a lead rope from his unbuttoned sweaty shirt, as if under former slave conditions Pete had been led periodically to slaughter by means of it. Certainly, he had not been led to pasture. Despite his rambling, ambulatory, psychomotor activity, he was a born worker. Everything else in his life, his wife and three children, his hobbies, his friendships, these fell to ruin when work time came. And for him, this arrived at eye-opening time, at 6 or 6:30 in the morning. He was, in contrast to what Lars regarded as neurologically normal humanity, a wide-awake early riser. It amounted to a defect. And this after a fugue the night before until bar-closing time of beer and pizza, with or without Molly, his wife.
"What do you mean, sure?" Lars said, sipping his special drink. He felt weary. Today, trance state had enervated him beyond the recall of the chemical elixir.
"Okay, you mean, sure, I ought to quit my job. I know the rubric you've got to offer. Frankly, I've heard it so many times I could..." Peter interrupted in his agitated, husky, urgent voice.
"Ah, the hell, you know what I mean. Bull, you never listen. All you do is go to heaven and come back with a word of God, and we're supposed to believe his gospel every stupid thing you write down, like some..."
He gestured, tick-like, his big frame shuddering under his blue cotton shirt.
"Look at the service you could do humanity if you weren't so lazy."
"What service?"
"You could solve all our problems."
Pete glowered at him.
"If they've got weapons designs up there..."
He jerked his thumb vaguely toward the ceiling of the office, as if during his trance states, Lars literally rose.
"Science ought to investigate you. Christ's sake, you ought to be at Caltech being examined, not running this fairy outfit you run."
"Fairy," Lars said. "Okay, maybe you're not a fairy. So what? My brother-in-law's a fairy, and that's okay with me. A guy can be anything he wants."
Pete's voice rose to a shout that boomed and echoed.
"As long as it's integrity, it's what he really is and not what he's told to do. You..."
His tone was withering now.
"You do what they tell you. They say, go get us a bunch of primary design concepts in 2D form, and you do."
He lowered his voice, grunted, rubbed his perspiring upper lip. Then, seating himself, he reached his long arms out,
groping for the heap of sketches on Lars' desk. "These aren't them," Lars said, retaining the sketches.
"These aren't? Then what are they? They look like designs to me."
Pete twisted his head, extended his neck piston-wise to peer. Lars said,
"From Peep East, Ms. Topchefs."
Pete's opposite number in Bulganingrad or New Moscow, the Soviets had two design engineering firms available, the typical overlapping duplication of a monolithic society, had the task of rendering these to their next step.
"Can I see them?"
Lars passed them to Pete, who put his nose almost against the flat, glossy surfaces, as if suddenly nearsighted. He said nothing for a time as he turned from one to the next, and then he snarled, sat back, hurled the stack of picks onto the desk, or nearly onto it. The stack fell to the floor. Pete, stretching, picked them up, respectfully straightened them until they were precisely even, one with the next, and set them down on the desk, demonstrating that he had meant no incivility.
"They're terrible," he said.
"No," Lars said. No more so than his own, actually. Pete's loyalty to him as a person made a puppet out of Pete's jaws. Friendship wagged the big man's tongue, and although Lars appreciated this, he preferred to see the record set straight.
"They can go into Plowshare. She's doing her job."
But of course, these sketches might not be representative. The Soviets had a notorious reputation for managing to traduce Koch. The planet-wide police agency was fair game for the Soviets' own secret police, the KVB. It had not been discussed at the time Don Packard had produced the sketches, but the fact was just this. The Soviets, onto the presence of a Koch agent at their weapons fashion designs level, probably showed only what they cared to show and held the rest back. That always had to be assumed. Or at least he assumed that. What UN-W NATSEC did with their Koch-obtained material was something else. He had no knowledge of that. The board's policy could range from total credulity, although that was hardly likely, to utter cynicism. He himself tried to seek out a moderate middle ground. Pete said,
"And that fuzzy print, that's her, right?"
"Yes." Lars showed him the blurred glossy. Again, Pete put his nose to the subject of his scrutiny.
"You can't tell anything," he decided finally. "And for this, Koch gets money? I could do better just by walking into the Bulganingrad Institute for Defensive Implementation Research Division with a Polaroid Land camera."
"There's no such place," Lars said. Pete glanced up.
"You mean they abolished their bureau? But she's still at her desk."
"It's now under someone else, not Victor Camo. He disappeared. A lung condition. It's now called..." Lars turned up the memo he had taken from the Kochman's report. In Peep East, this happened continually. He attached no importance to it.
"Minor Protocides, Subdivision Crop Production Archives of Bulganingrad, a branch of Middle Autentool Safety Standards Ministry, which is their cover for their non-bacteriological warfare research agencies of every kind, as you know."
He bumped heads with Pete, inspecting the fuzzy glossy print of Lilo Topchef, as if time alone might have brought from the blur a more accessible image.
"What is it," Pete said, "that obsesses you?"
Lars shrugged.
"Nothing. Divine discontent, maybe."
He felt evasive. The engineer from Lanferman Associates was too keen an observer, too capable.
"No, I mean, but first..."
Pete expertly ran his sensitive, long, stained dark fingers along the underside of Lars' desk, seeking a monitoring device. Finding none immediately at hand, he continued,
"You're a scared man. Do you still take pills?"
"No. You're lying." Lars nodded.
"I'm lying."
"Sleeping bad?"
"Medium." "If that horse's ass Nitz has got your goat..."
"It's not Nitz. To reshuffle your picturesque language, that goat's horse Nitz has not got my ass.
So, are you satisfied, sir?
Pete said, They can groom replacements for you for 50 years and not come up with anyone like you. I knew Wade. He was okay, but he wasn't in the same league as you. No one is, especially not that dame in Bulganingrad.
It's nice of you, Lars began, but Pete cut him savagely off.
Nice? Schnut. Anyhow, that's not it.
No, Lars agreed. That's not it. And don't insult Lilo Topchef.
Fumbling in his shirt pocket, Pete brought out a cheap drugstore-style cigar. He lit up, puffed its noxious fumes until the office dissolved and reeked. Oblivious, without giving a damn, Pete wheezed the smoke in and out, silent as he pondered. He had this virtue defect. Anything puzzling, he believed, if worried at long enough, could be elucidated. In any area, even that of the human psyche. The machine was no more and no less complicated, according to him, than biological organs created by 2 billion years of evolution. It was, Lars thought, an almost childishly optimistic view. It dated from the 18th century. Pete Fried, for all his manual skills, his engineering genius, was an anachronism. He had the outlook of a bright seventh grader.
I've got kids, Pete said, chewing on his cigar, making a bad thing worse. You need a family.
Sure, Lars said.
No, I'm not serious.
Of course you are, but that doesn't make you right. I know what's bothering me. Look.
Lars touched the code trips of his locked desk drawer. Responding to his fingertips, the drawer at once, cash register-like, shot open. From it, he brought forth his own new sketches, the items which Pete had traveled 3,000 miles to see. He passed them over and felt the pervasive guilt which always accompanied this moment. His ears burned. He could not look directly at Pete. Instead, he busied himself with his appointment gimmicks, anything to keep himself from thinking during this moment. Pete said presently,
Well, these are swell.
He carefully initialed each sketch, beneath the official number which the UN-W NATSEC bureaucrat had stamped, sealed, and signed.
You're going back to San Francisco, Lars said, and you're going to whip up a poly-something model, then begin on a working prototype.
My boys are, Pete corrected. I just tell them what to do. You think I get my hands dirty with poly-something?
Lars said, Pete, how the hell long can it go on?
Forever,
Pete said promptly. The seventh grader's combination of naive optimism and an almost ferociously embittered resignation.
Lars said, This morning, before I could get inside the building, here one of those autonomic TV interviewers from Lucky Bagman show cornered me. They believe. They actually believe.
So? They believe. That's what I mean.
Pete gestured agitatedly with his cheap cigar.
Don't you get it? Even if you had looked that TV lens right in the eye, so to speak, and you had said calmly and clearly, maybe something like this, you think I'm making weapons? You think that's what I'm bringing back from hyperspace? From that nitty-nitty realm of the supernatural?
But they need to be protected, Lars said.
Against what?
Against anything, everything. They deserve protection. They think we're doing our job.
After a pause, Pete said,
There's no protection in weapons. Not anymore. Not since, you know, 1945, when they wiped out that Jap city.
But, Lars said, the Persaps think there is. There seems to be.
And that seems to be what they're getting.
Lars said, I think I'm sick. I'm involved in a delusional world. I ought to have been a Persap. Without my talent as a medium, I would be... I wouldn't know what I know. I wouldn't be on the inside looking out.
I'd be one of those fans of Lucky Bagman in his morning TV interview show that accepts what he's told, knows it's true because he saw it on that big screen with all those stereo colors richer than life. It's fine while I'm actually in the comatose state, in the damn trance. There, I'm fully involved. Nothing off in a corner of my mind jeers. Jeers? What do you mean? Pete eyed him anxiously. Doesn't something inside you jeer? He was amazed. Hell no! Something inside me says, you're worth twice the postgrads they're paying you. That's what something inside me says, and it's right. I mean to take that up with Jack Lanferman one of these days. Pete glared in self-righteous anger. I thought you felt the same way, Lars said. And come to think of it, he had assumed that all of them, even General George McFarlane Nitz, stood in relationship to what they were doing as he stood, corrupted by shame, afflicted with a sense of guilt that made it impossible for him to meet anyone eye to eye. Let's go down to the corner and have a cup of coffee, Pete said. It's time for a break.